This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air. Kia ora and welcome to the Pet Podcast. Pet is a dark and humorous short story collection that explores our relationships with children, lovers and other animals. The stories in this collection were written by Catherine Van Beek. In episode 12, The Fishhook, an imagined near future has two girls searching for a better life, read by Iona Winter. This podcast contains strong language and dark themes. Please use discretion.
Stinky clenched the screaming rat in his jaws and shook it until it was silent. He dropped the body at Maya's feet, and she bent down and scratched behind his pointy blonde ears. Karaue, good boy! He ran back into the grass, disappearing amongst the golden spikelets. Maya dropped the rat into her faded backpack and laid it beneath a gorse bush. She returned to the piece of earth she was working, to the glass jar protruding from the hard ground. It had taken all day to find something that wasn't an old chip packet or fizzy drink bottle. Things were more easily dug from the mud around the mangroves, but it was bad enough smelling the water from here, let alone standing knee-deep in it. She scraped at the earth with the claw of her hammer. Sweat ran over her dark freckles and beneath the hei mātou that had once belonged to her mother. At last she freed the jar and held it aloft in the hazy sky. It had bevelled sides and a red screw-on lid. More importantly, it was filled with useful objects, nails, screws and washers. The sun refracted off the glass in swords of light, and she wondered if the rays could start a fire. Out here, everything seemed combustible. She put the jar and the hammer in her backpack with the rat, her half-empty water bottle and her battered lunchbox. The lunchbox kept the important things. Matches, tampons, knives. She dragged a clump of moth plant vines over her quarry. If someone looked closely, they'd notice the methodical patchwork of excavations she'd completed over the past months. But no one was looking. They were too busy guarding the perimeter of the old landfill to bother checking within. Stinky! He emerged from the mangroves, tail aloft. Let's go! They raced each other along Miola Reef, their mosquito-bitten legs pumping through the heat, Maya's sweat-drenched ponytail thumping against her back. They slowed as they reached the fence, which was heavy with bindweed and festooned with white flowers. Between gaps in the leaves, Maya saw the fluorescent green vest of a security guard. She inched towards the hole at the bottom of the fence, where a section of the wire mesh had come untethered, and a depression in the ground was big enough to slink through. She lay down and peered out. The guard's boots paced up and down in front of her. Finally, he turned to patrol another part of the fence line and disappeared past the manuka tree. Maya pushed her backpack through the hole and crawled after it. Stinky followed, and they darted through the scrub until they were out in the main road. They sauntered through the wastelands, past the old zoo and the abandoned museum, as though they were merely out for an afternoon stroll. They emerged in Western Springs Park near the old lake, crossed the clearing with its scattering of tents, and slipped in through the low skirt of branches around the Pūhutukawa. Hidden amongst the trees' winding roots were their possessions, cooking utensils, Maya's school raincoat, and a dog bowl, Stinky's name painted in bright colours on the side. Maya went out to her fire pit and ignited the kindling with a flick of a match. She took the rat by its tail and dragged it through the flames to singe off its fur. She'd learned this trick from Mrs. Tupua, the unofficial mayor of this part of the park, who lived in the large tent on the other side of the clearing. The colourful awnings, a fold-out picnic table and the kayak resting up against a tree made Mrs. Tupua's camp look almost cheerful, though everything was starting to fade after a year in the sun. Maya peeled the skin from the rat as though it were a mushroom and pried its belly open with her fingers. She put the entrails in Stinky's bowl, then impaled the rat on a green willow stick and toasted it over the flames. To Maya's left, Posy was also roasting something over a fire. She sat outside her small tent, cooking with one hand and batting her older toddler away from the flames, while the younger toddler burrowed beneath her shirt for a drink. To Maya's right, a pup tent had sprung up beyond the hollow tree stump. As she watched, a man emerged from the tent and walked towards her.
"Something smells good," he said, ignoring Stinky's barking.
Maya withdrew the rat from the fire and folded her knees up over her chest. The man smiled wolfishly. "I'm Nathan. What do you want?"
"I heard there's water here."
"Yep." He took a step closer.
"Where?"
"The council delivers it to the main road, around sunrise." Maya bit into her rat. Nathan tilted his head in the direction of the lake.
"Good eating."
Maya followed his gaze to the two plump geese sitting by the thick green water. "They're not for eating."
"Says who?"
"Says Mrs. Tupua. We need them to lay eggs. No more eggs, no more geese. Get it?"
Maya sucked the last of the rat's flesh.
She noticed Nathan eyed the remains, and she gave them to Stinky.
"I see you'd prefer to eat vermin," Nathan said.
Maya surveyed his quick eyes, sinewy frame and tense shoulders.
"You can only stay here if you don't cause trouble."
"I'm staying because I do as I please." Nathan returned to his tent and pulled out a solar camping stove. Maya watched as he poured water into a billy, added what looked like a handful of bones, and boiled it into a broth. Once it had cooled, he poured the liquid into a bottle, attached a teat, and retreated within the tent. There was a stir in the clearing as the volunteers arrived, the reflective strips on their orange vests bright in the sinking sun. They bore the week's spoils, goods scavenged from abandoned shops and business liquidations. Tonight they were dispensing antibacterial wipes. Maya took her packet with a thin smile, wishing it was muesli bars. The volunteers left and the sky reddened. Maya crept inside the tangle of Puhutukawa roots and lay down, using her raincoat as a pillow. Stinky curled beside her and burrowed his nose into the nook of her elbow. He fell asleep before she did, twitching and whimpering. Maya wondered if they dreamt the same dreams, if he too was transported back to when the grass was green and her mother twirled her in circles in the sky. Light filtered through the branches and the cackle of minor birds sounded overhead. Maya inched closer to the dozing Stinky. "Ki te aroha o ki a koe," she murmured, kissing his nose. He blinked and licked her chin in reply. Out in the clearing, a man ducked out of Posy's tent and hurried away, zipping his fly. Maya walked through a stand of trees to the water tanker on the main road. As usual, members of the ratepayers' union were protesting against the use of council water, and security guards were keeping them in check. Nathan was already in the line of park dwellers and Australian refugees, a bag over his shoulder, a bundle clutched to his chest. Maya joined the queue behind him. People who still had places to go trudged past on their way into the city. Some parents still took their children to the amalgamated school in the Altea Centre. Some adults still had jobs to do.
They cycled, caught the crowded buses, and even drove the occasional car. But most made the pilgrimage up Great North Road on foot. Maya pulled the glass jar from her backpack and held it out towards the passers-by. A man in his 50s slowed and peered at it.
"Would you look at that?" he said. "It looks like something from the 1900s. "It's very handy," said Maya.
The man ran his finger over the red lid. He opened his bag, pulled out two feijoas and a boiled egg, and offered them to Maya.
"Okay," she said.
They swapped the items and the man plodded away, the jar of fasteners shaking in time with his steps. Maya peeled the egg, bit off half, and bent down to give the other half to Stinky. She heard a shout and looked up to see the ratepayers' union protesters walking towards them with placards. They were led by a rosy-faced man in his 70s.
"I've paid taxes, rates and insurance all my life," he bellowed.
"That's right, Andy,"
called another protester, a well-dressed woman in her 40s.
Andy scowled at the people queuing for water. "Now the doctors are busy with lowlifes like this and I can't get my skin cancer removed," he cried, fingering a crusty patch on his earlobe.
"It's not right," agreed the woman. "Some of these people aren't even New Zealanders." "I've paid my dues."
"So have I. And now I can't get vaccinations for my kids," said the woman, her face crinkling with worry.
Andy and his followers reached the end of the queue, turned around and marched back again.
"How much water do we really have and why isn't it being set aside for ratepayers?"
Andy hollered. The protesters marched past Mrs. Tupua, who'd been made redundant the same week her husband got his diagnosis. They marched past Posey, whose boyfriend had disappeared, owing several months' rent. And they marched past Maya, whose father rested in the mass grave in the domain beside the hospital. She wondered what made the protesters so certain they'd never end up on her side of the tanker. A security guard took Andy by the elbow.
"Mr. Lockett, we've got an agreement. Front of the truck only."
Andy lifted his placard and led the way back to the tanker's cab.
"Hey, hey, ho, ho," he cried. His followers joined in. "They don't pay rates, they gotta go."
The line of park dwellers shuffled forward and Nathan reached the front of the queue.
"Do you have any formula?"
he asked. A volunteer filled his baby bottle with cloudy water and handed it back.
"Is that all you've got?"
"We're only allowed 1 teaspoon per bottle."
"That's ridiculous."
"A teaspoon each is fair to everyone."
"Look at him," Nathan said, his voice fierce.
He pulled a scarf away from the bundle he held in his arms. Maya saw the volunteer recoil. "It's all we can do."
"He needs a doctor."
"Maybe there'll be one tomorrow." Nathan turned away. He pulled the scarf back over the baby, but not before Maya had glimpsed its bony arms and clawing hands. Not before she'd seen the sunken eyes in its bloodless face. Sneaking into the old landfill was always more difficult than sneaking out of it. Maya and Stinky crept from tree to bush, timing their movements with the guards. At last they made it to the manuka tree, and when the guard turned away, they ran to the hole in the fence and wriggled through. They walked to the tip of the peninsula where Maya cleared the vines from her diggings.
"See if you can get a rabbit today," she told Stinky, "and I'll see if I can get us another egg."
She scratched at the dirt, heaping her scrapings onto yesterday's square in the patchwork. She unearthed one crushed aluminium can and then another. At last, she hit a solid object. She worked around it until she revealed the corner of a steel case. Behind her, Stinky whined.
"You got something? You got it, Apite?" Maya turned on her haunches to see Stinky standing still, ears pricked. Voices floated towards them on the warm breeze. In the distance, two people pushed the weed-covered gate open and walked in. Maya tensed. Between her and the intruders, there was nothing but low scrub. Maya put on her backpack, dropped to her stomach and crawled down towards the mangroves. She slithered into the silty water and turned back to Stinky. He stood in the thick mud, whimpering. "Come on, boy!" He inched towards her and she scooped his little body into her arms. "Quiet," she whispered, hoping he'd remember the command from their old life. She glided behind a screen of mangrove leaves and watched as a young woman and a grey-haired man approached. They stood near the fetid mud in their smart clothes, metres from Maya's diggings.
"Stupid place for a landfill," said the man.
"I guess they figured that out in the 1970s when they closed it." They looked out over the stagnant reef.
"So what, we charge people to dig here?" the man asked.
"We raise money for the Water Technologies Program. We get some of the stuff out of the ground and we provide resources for the unemployed. That's my plan." The man looked around the uneven landscape. Tires and building rubble rejected by the earth poked back up through the surface.
"Didn't we close this off for a reason?"
"Oh, a couple of health and safety incidents, but we can get around that." The man rubbed his hands over his temples. "Christ, why didn't we do this years ago?" "You tell me." Maya's skin itched. She felt hot and lightheaded as though she might vomit. Stinky whined.
"What was that?" asked the woman. "A pukeko?"
"Sure," said the man. Maya clutched Stinky tighter.
"Quiet," she whispered. "Tooty tooty."
The man clapped his hands together.
"All right," he said. "Run a pilot. Work out what systems we need and grow it from there."
"Great, thanks.
Now let's get out of this shithole."
Maya waited until they'd gone and then waded back to shore. She used a stick to scrape as much mud off Stinky's legs and then hers as she could. Her skin was red and blotchy. Stinky lifted his paws up and down, agitated.
"Oh, sorry, boy."
Stinky looked up at her and she bent and kissed him.
"Poof, you really are kino kino."
She returned to her work, hacking around the case until she was able to pry it from the ground. She pressed the clasps either side of the handle and raised the lid. Inside lay a pair of white lace-up roller skates. Maya lifted them out of the case. They looked about her size. She wondered about the girl who'd worn them, a girl whose only worries had been high school and boys. She crammed the skates into her backpack. The case could stay here. She went to close it and noticed the corner of an envelope peeping from the lining. She eased it out, opened it, and pulled out a ring. It was thin and gold with a small, bright diamond.
This would be worth more than an egg and 2 Fijoas, if she could find the right buyer.
There was a rustle in the bushes and then a squawk. Stinky burst from the mangroves with a pukeko dangling from his jaws.
"Ka rawe!"
Maya picked her way back towards the hole in the fence, the pukeko in her hands, the precious envelope hidden in her bra. Through the steam rising from her pot, Maya saw Mrs. Tupua sway in the awning of her tent. These days, Mrs. Tupua, who had once glowed like an angel, looked thin and grey-skinned. The older woman shuffled to the picnic table and sat down. Maya ate a few bites of stew, spooned some chunks of meat into Stinky's bowl and carried the rest across the clearing.
Mrs. Tupua, she asked, are you okay?
Mrs. Tupua looked down and dragged a finger along the yellow picnic tabletop, winding her way through embellishments of rust and mould. Maya set the stew down and disappeared into the tent. When Mrs. Tupua's sons had lived here, it had been homely and inviting. But since they'd left for the South Island, all hope seemed to have leaked away. In the middle room, dirty dishes were piled next to a stack of disinfectant wipes. Maya peered into the other rooms. Mrs. Tupua's bed was unmade and clothes were strewn on the floor. Her son's room had acquired a shrine of plastic flowers. Maya made her way to the collapsible kitchen bench, found a bowl and spoon, and rubbed them clean with a wipe.
Mrs. Tupua, you have to eat, she said, leaving the musty tent. Would you like some stew? Pukeko special, better than a 5-star restaurant.
She tipped the stew into the bowl and slid the spoon into Mrs. Tupua's hand.
5 stars, you say, the older woman said.
Mrs. Tupua ate, and Maya sat in silence. She looked out at the overgrown grass encircled by the concrete path. Mrs. Tupua used to clear that path with her camping broom during regular community working bees. Now it was choked with litter, and the other park dwellers seemed standoffish without Mrs. Tupua's helpful, handsome sons around to joke and tease. Maya took the broom and swept the path, gathering plastic wrappers and dry leaves and stuffing them into the hollow tree stump Mrs. Tupua had once insisted they use as a bin. Once the path was clear, Maya returned to her tree. She removed her worn sneakers, tugged the roller skates on and laced them up. She teetered from the tree to the path, where she began skating, awkwardly at first and then faster, enjoying the feeling of her body rushing through air. Images from the park flashed past, the orange light on the trees, Posy and her toddlers in the porch of their tent, Mrs. Tupua with her head in her hands, Nathan giving his baby a bottle of milk, Posy's children gnawing flesh from bones, Mrs. Tupua shuffling back into her tent, and all the while Stinky prancing alongside her, his little triangle ears pointing towards the sun. Maya skated faster, her mother's hei mātou rising above her sternum, her ponytail flying in the breeze. She skidded to a stop near a tree, laughing. She leant down to scratch Stinky's head, thinking how pretty the lake looked in the sun. And then she realised. The geese weren't floating on the green skin of the water. They weren't asleep on the grass beside the harakeke bushes. They were gone. Maya straightened up and skated towards Posy's tent.
What happened to the geese? She demanded.
Posy looked up at Maya. Oh, hi. Maya indicated the bones the children were sucking. What's that?
I didn't ask him to do it.
Maya stamped a skated foot.
Why did you take them?
They were already dead. Maya turned on her wheels and skated back down the path. Nathan watched her advance towards him. The withered baby lay in his arms, too weak to suck the bottle of Posy's milk. Maya hurtled forward, tripped and fell onto her knees and picked herself up.
You fucking moron, she yelled. Language, young lady. I can't believe anyone would be so selfish.
Selfish, am I?
Nathan stared up at Maya, insouciant as a cockroach. Maya felt a boiling heat rise within her. She wanted to kick Nathan's head in with her heavy boots. She wanted to take his stupid baby and throw it in the lake. Instead, she tore off along the path. Nathan laughed.
And Maya slid to a stop and turned back to him enraged.
Your ugly baby's gonna die anyway, she yelled.
She shot off again, circling the clearing in a spiral of hatred. She skated until her fury boiled away and she was left with the sediments of rage. She stomped back into her tree and lay against its thick trunk. Blood and grit stung in her knees. It was hours before she slept. And when she did, she dreamt that Nathan had the diamond ring around her neck, choking her.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, they don't pay rates, they gotta go.
The ratepayers' union members waved their placards and the working people plodded past the tanker, giving it a wide berth to avoid being pulled into the altercation Nathan was having with a volunteer.
You said you'd get a doctor.
I said maybe there'd be a doctor.
It's urgent.
The volunteer filled the baby bottle with weak formula and passed it to Nathan. He held it up, incredulous.
You can't fob me off with this useless slop.
The volunteer locked eyes with the security guard who stepped forward. Move on, please, the guard said, crossing his arms over his chest. Even the security guards were thinner these days, but this one still looked stronger than Nathan.
I need a doctor. Move on,
the guard repeated. Nathan didn't budge. Maya flung a hand in the air and made eye contact with the guard.
He killed our geese, she said, pointing at Nathan. He's wrecking things for everyone.
Nathan spun around, eyes flashing.
Fuck you, he said, advancing towards Maya.
The guard stepped forward and put Nathan in a headlock. Nathan clutched at the muscled arm around his throat with his spare hand. The baby bottle fell to the ground and thin milk leaked from the teat onto the dry earth.
Move on, said the guard, releasing his grip.
Nathan snatched the bottle and stormed off towards the trees. Maya felt a hand on her arm and whirled around with a start. A girl about her age stood beside her. She had bright blue eyes and a sunburnt face.
Do you know that man?
The girl asked.
He killed our geese.
The girl nodded. He's a murderer. He murdered my goat. The queue of people moved and Maya shuffled forward. The girl fell into step beside her.
What's your name? Maya asked.
Lulu.
I'm Maya. This is Stinky.
Lulu bent down and gave him a pat.
Hi, Stinky.
Do you live in Western Springs?
Oh, I lived up the road for a while, Lulu said, gesturing towards Grayland Park, about 20 minutes' walk away. But now I'm just stalking Nathan.
Why?
So I can ruin his life, Lulu said, casually.
A young man walked past and Maya held the diamond ring out towards him. He slowed down, grinned, and came to a stop.
It's the real deal, Maya said, indicating a hallmark stamped into the gold.
What do you want for it? The man asked.
What have you got?
He looked Maya up and down, taking in her scratched legs and bloodied knees.
I've got a first aid kit.
What's in the kit?
Bandages, ibuprofen, paracetamol, antiseptic cream. And iodine spray.
Maya nodded. I'll need food as well.
I can throw in 5 cans of baked beans.
Make it 10 and a can opener. The man looked at the ring again.
Deal, he said. I'll come back tonight.
Maya returned the ring to its envelope and slid it into her bra. My camp's through those trees. The man smiled and walked off, whistling.
Where did you get that from?
Lulu asked. Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would.
Maya stared at Lulu and Lulu stared back. They were as skinny, scruffy, and sunburnt as each other.
"Where are your parents?" Maya asked.
Lulu tilted her chin up, defiant. "Same place yours are, I guess." Maya reflexively reached for her haimato and rubbed the stylized fish hook between her fingers.
"That's cool," Lulu said, pointing to it. "I love Pōnamu."
"Thanks." It was Mum's.
"I'm jealous. The only thing I got from my mum is this," Lulu said, opening her mouth and rolling her tongue. Maya laughed. "Gross!" "Wait, there's more."
Lulu stuck her tongue out again and rolled it up into a three-leaf clover.
"Oh, that's so creepy."
"I'll show you how to do it if you show me where you got the ring," Lulu said, rolling her tongue into a series of improbable shapes.
"Ooh, I do not want to know."
Lulu's face snapped back to seriousness. "But will you show me anyway?"
"Why should I?"
"Because I'm the only friend you've got who doesn't eat shit." Maya looked down at Stinky, who was feasting on a pile of rabbit droppings.
"Oh my God, you're so embarrassing," Maya said, pulling him away.
Lulu raised an eyebrow and Maya laughed.
"Oh right, after this."
At last they reached the top of the queue. A woman in a car drove past and wound down her window.
"Parasites!" she yelled. "Parasites!"
Her outburst stunned the members of the ratepayers' union into admiring silence, until Andy Lockett began a new chant.
"Hey, hey, ho, ho, parasites have got to go!"
Maya led Lulu into the back of the Pohutukawa tree. They crept over the twisted roots and peered out through the trees. Posey's kids played in her tent while she sat in the awning, grimacing as she pumped milk from her breasts.
"Jesus," said Lulu.
"That's for your mate," said Maya. "He swapped our geese for her milk." She pointed to where Nathan sat outside his tent, sharpening a knife on a whetstone.
"Me hunter,"
Lulu mocked in a voice like a caveman.
"Me big and strong. Me gonna be sorry I killed Barnaby."
They left the tree and Maya showed Lulu through the park.
"There are more people every day," Maya said. "It's the same up the road. People everywhere."
They passed the zoo and the museum, crossed over the road and disappeared into the scrub.
"This might take a while," Maya said.
She led Lulu through the bushes, stopping at each one to make sure no one was watching, until at last they got to the manuka tree and peered around it.
"What the?" Maya whispered.
The gate to the old landfill was invitingly open, and a new security guard stood beside it, as though waiting for visitors.
"Pretend we're taking Stinky for a walk," Maya said.
They strolled towards the fence.
"Hi,"
Maya called. She gave the guard a cheerful wave.
"What's in there?"
The guard put her hands on her hips.
"Disneyland." "There's a reef there, right? Maybe I can get some kaimoana."
"Sure, if you like mercury poisoning. It's an old landfill."
Maya's eyes widened.
"There must be some really cool stuff in there."
The guard shrugged.
"You can have a look, if you pay."
"Pay? For old rubbish?"
"It's council property."
"What's the fee?"
Lulu asked.
"They weren't real clear about that. Just show me what you find and I'll make a call."
The guard fossicked in her pockets and handed them each a piece of paper and a pen.
"What's this?"
"It says the council's not responsible for anything that happens in there."
They signed the forms and stepped inside. Maya led Lulu to the tip of the peninsula. Do you have anything to dig with?
Lulu laid out the contents of her bag, the water bottle, a map, and a screwdriver.
That might work, Maya said.
Lulu crouched down and shaved the hard dirt. She struck something immediately and unearthed a piece of black pipe. It crumbled in her hands.
Ah, she groaned, disappointed.
Keep going, you'll find something eventually. As they worked, Stinky rushed into the scrub. He bounded back out and dropped a dead rat at Maya's feet.
God, are we?
Maya put the rat in the shade and kept digging. She and Lulu settled into a rhythm, the scraping hammer and the scratching screwdriver making primitive music.
What's the best thing you've found here? Lulu asked.
Probably the giraffe skull.
For real?
I got a whole carrot cake for that skull.
Cake, Lulu cried. Don't talk about cake.
Don't worry, we'll have some delicious rat tonight. Lulu play-acted gagging, throwing up, and to the sounds of Maya's laughter, dying. She died a great dramatic death, reviving a few times before finally collapsing on the ground, twitching.
How did you end up with a goat? Maya asked.
Lulu stopped twitching and opened her eyes.
From a shelter. We were supposed to get a dog.
She sat up and resumed her digging.
He was an orphan. I hand-reared him.
Maya felt her hammer scrape against something softer, pliant. She worked carefully around the shape and pulled it from the ground. It was a plump Cupid doll.
That's cute, said Lulu.
Ah, it's not worth much, though, said Maya. People want useful things. She heard the grass rustle and peered up to see the guard making her way towards them. Maya winked at Lulu. Once the guard was within earshot, Maya held up the doll as though studying it.
I bet this is worth a bit.
It's in perfect condition, Lulu agreed.
Nice,
the guard said. She stood over them for a minute and then walked away, stopping in her tracks when Lulu's voice rang out with excitement.
Got something!
The guard turned and walked back towards them.
Dumbass! Hissed Maya. Shit, sorry.
Lulu whispered. She kept scraping, revealing a plastic box.
What have you got there?
The guard asked.
Some kind of case?
Lulu inspected the label, still faintly legible.
Something to do with fish?
She popped the box open to reveal three spools of fishing line.
Ah, Lulu sighed, disappointed.
Better luck next time, Maya said. The guard stood over Lulu's shoulder and peered into the box.
Wouldn't someone want it? She asked.
Fishing line, said Maya. I thought you said fish was poisonous.
The container, wouldn't that be useful?
Maya shrugged.
Sure, I guess.
Maya took the box from Lulu. She picked out the spools of fishing line, threw them into the bushes, and then stashed the container beside the doll. The guard walked back to the gate.
Nice save, said Lulu.
Maya continued to dig, moving incrementally closer to the bushes. Slowly, when the guard wasn't looking, she reclaimed each of the spools and hid them in her shorts. She and Lulu continued their work, less energetically now, their breath dragging through the thick air.
Hey, look, said Lulu.
Beside the gate, a small group of people were talking to the guard. They signed her waiver, walked onto the peninsula and started digging.
Shit, said Maya, this place will be packed soon.
There was a shriek from the bushes and Stinky appeared with another rat. Maya took it from him and looked at Lulu.
Let's go. They packed up and returned to the gate.
"Did you find anything else?" asked the guard.
"Just the plastic container and the doll," said Maya. The guard stuck her hand out.
"I'll take the doll."
"That's not fair. She's the best thing."
"Hand it over."
Maya did as she was told.
"And what about the rats?"
"What?"
"I saw your dog catch some rats."
Maya crossed her arms. "The council should pay us to get rid of the rats."
The guard thought for a moment. "I'll ask them what their policy is on rats."
Maya, Lulu and Stinky walked out towards the park. The security guard looked down at the doll and ran a finger over its grimy, wide-eyed face. Maya cooked the vermin and brought them inside the tree, where a giggling Lulu was letting Stinky lick her face.
"You know I just gave him rat guts,"
Maya said. She handed a skewered rodent to Lulu and sat down beside her. Lulu took a bite.
"Did you ever think you'd be eating rats?"
she asked, her mouth full.
"Honestly, I thought I'd be a marine biologist or something, out on the water, catching my own kaimoana.
I thought I'd be a rock star with a rider of, like, macrobiotic junk food.
I would love some macrobiotic junk food right now."
Stinky sat between them and rested his head on Maya's knee. Lulu reached over and patted his shaggy coat.
"Do you still have dreams for your life?" Lulu asked.
"Besides staying alive?"
"Yeah."
"Well, that would be more than my parents managed to do."
"What happened to them?"
Maya gnawed the last of the meat off her stick and gave the remains to Stinky. "With Mum, the antibiotics didn't work. That was ages ago. And then when Dad got sick last year, we couldn't get medicine. I couldn't even bury him properly. He's in that stupid mass grave in the Domain."
"Same with my mum. She got sepsis. For real."
"Yeah. And my stepfather's a jerk, so I couldn't stay with him."
"What are your dreams for your life?" Maya asked.
Lulu smiled. "Te wai pōnamu."
Maya rolled her eyes. "Well, sure, everyone wants to go to the South Island."
"Yeah, but I'm actually going."
"Isn't it dangerous?"
"More dangerous than staying here?"
Lulu countered. "I just want to try and have a normal life." Maya nodded. It had been a long time since she'd imagined what a normal life could be.
"We could take that old lady's kayak," Lulu said, nodding in the direction of Mrs. Tupua's tent.
"What, and just paddle down there?"
"Yeah, from Blockhouse Bay."
Lulu sat up, opened her backpack and pulled out her map. She traced her finger around the North Island. "Getting past the Manukau Heads would be the hardest part. Then we'd go round the coast until we got to Wellington."
"Have you done kayaking before?"
"Sure." Maya sat up to examine the map.
"How would we get across the Cook Strait?"
"I guess we'd have to find someone with a bigger boat."
"And what about ruining Nathan's life?"
"I've been thinking about that.
I'm going to smash that stupid breast pump."
Lulu folded her map, lay down between the Pohutukawa roots and looked up at the kaleidoscope of leaves, birds and sky.
"Do you think that guy's going to come back for the ring?"
she asked.
"I think so. It seemed as though he was in love with someone."
"So he wants to do more than stay alive. He wants to be alive."
Maya lay down beside Lulu and closed her eyes. Leaves whispered overhead like half-remembered dreams. Sleep washed over her like an ocean. Maya woke to a minor bird shrieking an alarm. Lulu lay still beside her, her chest rising and falling as she slept. But something was wrong. Maya got to her feet and scrambled from the tree. "Stinky!" she called. Her voice grew higher. "Stinky!" She heard a shout behind her and turned to see the young man waving awkwardly from the other side of the clearing. He held a large plastic toolbox and a heavy-looking bag. "Hello!" he called. "Hi," said Maya. She scanned the clearing again and then jogged towards him. "Do you still have the ring?" he asked.
"Yep."
She led him nearer her tree, where he opened the toolbox and bag for her inspection.
"Okay, give me a second."
Maya turned to the pahutukawa and fossicked in her bra for the ring. A bleary-eyed Lulu stood behind the dark leaves.
"Stinky," Maya mouthed. "Gone."
Maya located the ring and turned back to the man.
"Good luck,"
she said, handing it to him.
"Thank you," said the man. "Good luck to you too."
He strolled through the clearing, waving jauntily at Posy and her kids, who were too busy eating to notice. He left the park, crossing paths with a pair of orange-vested volunteers. Maya ran up to them and they thrust a flyer into her hands.
"Have you seen a dog?" Maya asked. "A little honey-coloured dog?"
The volunteers shook their heads and kept walking. Maya looked down at the flyer.
"Gold miners wanted. Valuable goods can be found at the old Miola Reef landfill. Free to dig, and you keep 50% of what you find."
She screwed the piece of paper up, threw it away and wheeled around, crashing into Lulu. Maya stepped backwards, dazed.
"Found him?"
Lulu asked. Maya shook her head. "I'll look up by the road." Lulu ran through the trees and Maya charged down to the lake, towards the harakeke bushes with their black stalks, glossy flowers and pointed leaves, and behind them, something small and familiar lying on the ground.
"Stinky!"
Maya rounded the bushes and came to a stop. Resting at the water's edge was Stinky's head. His eyes were closed and his fur was streaked with crimson. The sounds of the park shrank to nothing. All Maya could hear was the throb of blood in her skull. She bent down, picked up Stinky's head and held it in her outstretched arms. She took a few uncertain steps with it, stopped and screamed. She saw Lulu run towards her, eyes wide with shock. She heard Lulu wail, "Oh, Stinky, no!" She felt Lulu wrap an arm around her and steer her back into the tree. She saw Lulu take the head from her hands and place it in a cradle of tree roots. Maya turned to her huddle of possessions and sifted mechanically through them. She found what she wanted and straightened, brandishing the hammer.
"I'm going to smash that pump!"
Lulu grabbed her arm. "Not while he's there, he's dangerous." Maya wrenched herself away.
"I don't care."
"You need to get him out of that tent." Lulu looked around and grabbed a stick from the pile of kindling. "Give me your matches." Lulu snatched the matchbox, darted from the pahutukawa, crouched behind a clump of harakeke. She checked to see that no one was watching and then lit the stick and slid it into the tree stump. The stump smoked, smouldered, and finally burst into flame. Lulu ran back into the pahutukawa and she and Maya watched as fire erupted into the sky. The air filled with the smell of burning plastic and the sound of snapping twigs. Nathan unzipped his tent and peered out. He grabbed his billy and ran towards the lake.
"Posy!"
he yelled. Posy scrambled from her tent with her saucepan and followed him down to the water.
"Now!" Lulu hissed.
Maya ran into Nathan's tent. The bottle and the pump sat on an old tea towel. Beside them was Stinky's ribcage,
the cooked meat mostly picked from his bones. Lying in the middle of the tent was the desiccated baby, its mouth open in a dry grimace. It looked up, blankly, not seeming to register her presence. Maya lifted the hammer above her head and brought it crashing down between its eyes. She staggered from the tent, her hammer slick with blood. "Oh, fuck," said Lulu. She dragged Maya back into the tree and stuffed their possessions into their bags. "Fuck, fuck, fuck." Nathan ran to the fire and emptied his billy onto it. It hissed but kept burning. A smouldering packet blew from the stump and onto the grass, which set alight. Posey doused the flames with water, but they continued to spread. She and Nathan sprinted back down towards the lake. "Run!" Lulu screamed. They picked up their things and ran to Mrs. Tupua's. Lulu flipped the kayak over, threw their belongings into it and picked up one end. "Come on!" Maya grabbed the other end and they ran. Far behind them, a spark twirled into the sky. A gust of air danced it into Nathan's tent, where it ate into the canvas and made its ravenous way up the walls. "It's kinda that way," said Lulu. "Anyone could see it wasn't going to live." She spoke brightly, as though her cheerful tone might neutralize the moans that seemed to ring from Maya with each step. They pulled the kayak down the middle of the empty street, using Maya's raincoat as a rope. The wheels of the roller skates, which were lashed to the base of the kayak with fishing line, whirred over the asphalt. Up ahead of them, a sculpture of a giant huntsman spider rose from the gloom. "Hey," Lulu said, "we're in Avondale. I think we're about halfway there." The streets grew dark in the waning light. Many of the houses were dark too. Some glimmered with the muted glow of solar lamps, and a few used their electricity rations to power their TVs. Images from some other untroubled world played across their screens. "What do you think Te Wai Pounamu will be like?" Lulu asked. She looked across at Maya. Maya stared ahead, her ponytail limp against her neck, her hei mātou streaked with blood.
The Pet Podcast was written by Catherine Van Beek and produced at ORFM, Otapoti, Dunedin. Music is by Jolyn Mulholland. The intros and outros are read by me, Tina Toontables. Thank you to Creative New Zealand and New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible. You can listen again and find further episodes of Pet at ORFM. That's oar.org.nz. This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.